one of my customers came in and I was like, "Are you all right, mate?" He went, "Al, I've really fucked up." And I was like, "What's happened?" And he told me, like, just some really poor decisions that he made. And I'm not going to go name names or telling the story on a podcast, but he was actually felt comfortable to open up. And I just said to him at the end of it, I was like, "Mate, you do know I'm here for you, don't you?" Like, and he was like, "Yeah, I do." And he said, "And that's why I came in." And, you know, I gave him a good cut. You know, we had a great chat. You know, and he left feeling just that little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, and that's happened quite a lot. And I think somebody mentioned it on one of your earlier podcasts of growing into the skin of becoming a business owner. Yeah. I can't remember who said it, but I really identified with that because I've always sort of tried to be just like Alex, the barber, who I love what I do and I enjoy what I do. I love cutting hair and making people feel good. You know, it's only sort of since COVID that I thought, oh, actually, yeah, I do have a business and I can't be that guy anymore. I have to be a salon barbershop owner in order for the business to survive.
Yeah.
When I first opened the doors of Teddy Edwards, it was £9.50 a haircut, which is probably one of the reasons why we had these like enormous queues.
So yeah,
my point being is like now I'm charging £28. It's about inching it up. And I always remember when we first put it up from £9.50 to £12.50, and you know there was only like a couple of people, but they'd moan saying, "Oh, you know, you're taking my tip away from you." You know, I'm like, "Well, if you don't want to come, don't come." You know, I'm not putting them up because I'm being greedy. I'm putting them up because I need to survive.
Yeah. Welcome to The Noble Barber. This is a podcast for barbers by barbers, cutting through the crap of the industry. We all want to know how our businesses can run better. I want to talk to people who've done it, messed it up and got it right second time round, and can tell us the way that you and I can make our businesses better. Hi, welcome to the latest episode of The Noble Barber podcast. I'm here today with Alex Burt, and we're going to talk... Well, actually, let's talk about Alex Burt. We always talk about the barbershops, the businesses, the company. But, you know, let's go back into kind of your origins and how you started out. Because I think we've got a similar background. I started as a hairdresser and then I still have salons, but I also have the barbershops. How was your journey? How did you end up barbering?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on the podcast. You know, I've been an avid follower of all the episodes so far. And again, I think the industry really needs stuff like this. So, thanks for having me.
Thanks, bud.
I started hairdressing, ladies hairdressing back in 1995. And I did that for a number of years. And once I sort of completed my apprenticeship, I got into barbering in sort of about sort of 3 years after that.
Okay. Proper old school barbering at that point.
It was proper, like when it was decidedly uncool to be a barber. Yeah. It was almost like the people that I was doing hairdressing with almost kind of viewed me as a bit of a failed hairdresser.
Oh, okay, yeah. I see that.
I used to sort of get teased by like a few of my friends that if we were out socially, that hairdressing, I'd be a hairdresser if it sort of suited me, or, you know, I'd tell the lads I was a barber. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But no, I really enjoyed the medium of cutting short hair, and that's what really sort of kind of gravitated me towards it. I love that kind of almost like no margin for error type thing, and I just for some reason connected with it. But at the same time, through hairdressing and through all the customer service training that was almost like the bedrock of hairdressing and bedrock of salons, I knew that I just didn't quite belong in the barbershop. Mm. And so I spent years like enjoying the medium of cutting hair, but I never sort of quite identified with how the old style barbershop used to run. Mm. You know, I hated sort of like the geezer approach. And so I always sort of thought one day I'm going to have my own shop and I want to run it a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a big spell that you know, barbering was seen as the kind of poor relative or...
Yeah.
Whereas now you see the kind of sophistication that's going through our industry.
Absolutely.
In the last 10 years. It's on par and beyond. You know, you look at, you know, barbering competitions and award ceremonies and the men's photography. You know, it's definitely stepped up a gear. And you were right at the beginning of that, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I opened up Teddy Edwards back in March 2013. So this year will be our 11th year. And started off with a two chair, tiny little unit. I remember even going in there with my dad, you know, back in the day, and we, you know, with the tape measure going, we can't fit two chairs in here. There's no way we can do that. But, you know, fast forward, say, 6 months, and then 9 months later, we just had these like legendary queues, like just going up the road. And it was like capping the queue before we'd even like opened up the door, you know, just going, right, everyone from this point, sorry, we're not going to be able to cut your hair today. And people would just wait. They'd queue up first thing in the morning and wait all day. So yeah, it was amazing. And we just, but I always had this belief of like, you know, that customers just need to be, you know, treated a certain way and deliver an experience, as opposed to that old barbershop model of next, what do you want?
Yeah.
You know, we have pumping music, you know, we made it vibrant and, you know, but you know, apart from everything else, you know, we were giving them like, you know, top quality haircuts.
Yeah, it did seem to kind of, you know, I think barbering took a bit of a hiding kind of, I guess, 80s, where, you know, the kind of the birth of the unisex salons arrived. I'm not sure that unisex salons ever did a very good job on their menswear. And I still think today, talking to other hairdressers, they struggle with, and certainly young hairdressers are struggling with short hair.
Yeah.
You know, it's been such a kind of long period of long blow dries and long kind of, you know, bobs and long hair, that to get that confidence in short hair, you just don't. Whereas you see it in barbers, it's directly the opposite side of the pie.
And I've witnessed it myself. You know, I've been in like, you know, educational seminars that have mostly been full of, you know, sort of hairdressers that don't have that confidence in short hair, and how the tide has turned, you know, even doing a little bit of stage work here and there. And so the amount of hairdressers that are in the audience, you know, eager to learn how to tackle that short hair. But also then the flip side to that is you're seeing so many barbers that don't have that experience with the long hair. And that's why I think, you know, sort of barbers that have that hairdressing background, they just have that fundamental like knowledge and sort of structure on how long hair works.
I mean, certainly now you're seeing, I guess now for the first time, I mean, I set my first two chair store up the same. We still call it the smallest barbershop in London because it's literally two chairs side by side. And if we didn't have an outside with a bench, we'd never have made it. But you know, we're seeing proper styles coming back now, you know, whether it is, you know, I think we've seen quite a bit of the kind of Oasis 90s looks coming back, which really weren't somewhere you'd go to a barber's for.
Well,
the mullet is cramming it through.
Well, referencing to the barber explosion, like say 10 years ago, if you remember, it was really heavy on sort of like the pomps and the slick backs and everything like that. And so the hair was like heavily styled. Whereas since the lockdown, where people started to grow their hair out and go for like the mullets and the sort of kind of Oasis, more sort of shaggy wolf looks, you know, things have become a lot more natural. And we've even noticed how our customers' spending habits have changed with the products that they're buying. So we used to sell tons of pomades.
Yeah, and the matte clays.
Everything's matte clays, sea salt spray, powder.
Mm. Yeah, no, big change. Powder's flying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're certainly seeing that education now seems to be about teaching long men's haircuts.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've done yourself in your building or your buildings, or of your education coming from external? Where does your, how do you kind of bleed that through the rest of the company that everyone can suddenly do?
So whenever anybody's applied for a job and they say, you know, I come from a hairdressing background, I've always kind of like sort of gone to people that do have that fundamental understanding. So I've been lucky enough that a lot of the people that come into Teddy's that and have eventually stayed, they've had a really good like foundation in that already.
Cool.
And then I've also been sort of quite lucky where a lot of the people that do work for us, you know, they're really keen to see how other people cut hair within the shop.
And so, we've
had a really good culture for that. And so that's always like enabled us, if someone's not felt confident in long hair, that they've just watched the other people that are good in long hair. And it's worked really well for us.
Yeah. And do you stick with one store? Do you work? Have you got a base or are you... kind of Monday, Tuesday in one, Wednesday, Thursday in another? How do you structure your life?
Yeah, so I now sort of, I work out almost like a month in advance, you know, which days of the week I'm going to be in a certain shop. And then I release that timetable to like all my clients. And so, yeah, I was quite reactive when I had the third shop, and I sort of felt that I was just running around like a headless chicken, and it just wasn't working. And so now working under this, where I'm sort of forward planning myself like a month in advance, it just, it makes things so much easier. And so now I spread myself between all three shops.
Is there, are they individual? Do you kind of walk in, you're like, yeah, I'm in the Worthing shop, that's this sort of, or I'm in the Hove shop and it's this? Do you, not that I know as parents, yeah, we don't have favourites, but but you know, is there, but yeah, is there a different vibe? I mean, we've there got is. Two, and although the serve is good, is the same, it's just different.
It is, very much so. I was telling like one of my staff recently that as I was opening up the third shop, we were getting sort of quite close to the opening date, and all of a sudden I went, oh my God, there's no artwork in here. And I just completely overlooked that. Whereas like our shops are sort of quite heavy on the artwork. You know, okay, there's it's quite stimulating for the eye. You know, the kids love it. You know, there's loads of sort of music and cultural and art reference everywhere, and gives the shop each shop has got its own character.
Yeah. And
I love each shop for different reasons. So like the Seven Dials, which is like where we first started from, so I've got like a deep connection there.
Are you in the original shot? Is it still the two-seater?
No
one? So, that moved, didn't
no
it?
So we ended up bagging the unit that was that came available next door, so we moved, so we closed the two chair shop down and went into the one next door, so that one's now got five chairs.
Oh, nice one.
And then the Hove one has six in total, and then the Worthing one has five.
And has each one kind of got, I don't want to use this phrase, but that kind of, is there a main kind of person in each one of those that,
yes,
when you turn up in Worthing, you don't suddenly have to deal with everything? Do you slot in, do your barbering, get on with your day, and there's someone there that's kind of coordinating everything else?
Yeah, we got a really good system where just people just know what they need to do and how they need to do it. And it just works really well there. I mean, obviously when I go in, you know, I have to sort of just, you know, sort of tweak things every now and again, but vastly on the whole, you know, all the guys know, you know, what to do and how to do it. Mm. And it's just quite a nice, autonomous,
yeah,
like way that we run things.
No, beautiful. And so going back 11 years,
yeah,
so the huge queue and people sitting there standing around with a coffee and a pastry, yeah. COVID, post-COVID, click and collect and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Are you now online booking? Do you find that still much walk-in versus bookings? How does your day live?
Well, we were really ahead of the curve. So we were one of the first shops in Brighton to do bookings.
Okay.
So over the years, we've been through a few booking platforms, shall we say.
Everyone has. That's the first thing you look at. It's like, anyone know what? Yeah, that's rubbish. Yeah. Everyone's at it. Yeah.
So, I mean, we became victims of our own success pre-COVID because people were just, they were waiting so long that after a while we started to lose customers. People's loyalty could only last for so long.
Yeah.
You know, especially if they were getting in their necks from either work or their significant others, you know, and they would say, oh, you know, I'm just nipping to the barbershop, and it'd be like, Christ, you're going to be gone for 4 hours.
Mm.
And so, you know, I had to make that leap and, you know, move over to a booking system. So consequently, when we then like hit COVID and hit lockdown, when it came to like knowing when we was going to reopen, I purposely held off and off and off and off, made a huge noise about it on social media, you know, connected with all our database saying, this is when we're going to go live. And I remember having like my laptop, two iPads, mobile phone out, and just hit the go button. And it was like, it was like Glastonbury tickets. It was insane. And we were fully booked, I think, for like the first 2 weeks across all shops.
Beautiful.
Up Brighton and Hove. Worthing
had Worthing open post-COVID, very post-COVID, recently, so, I don't know.
Yeah, so that was born through the winter lockdown, so the second one. And, you know, just it was a nightmare getting going because the licensing.
Right.
So it didn't have the retail license. It had like a different type of licensing. So we had to go for planning permission, and that just took forever because of COVID.
Yeah.
There was just a backlog, and so yeah, I think from actually viewing the property to it actually being opened took us a year.
Wow.
Which was really frustrating.
So the final let's not brush over the COVID period. But so we came back from COVID, like, what was it, kind of mid-April, 12th of April?
It was
Worthing open then, or did that open after that?
No, so that was May of last year ended up opening. Yeah. So that's been a huge learning curve, because in Brighton we opened up, subsequently, we opened up the Hove shop, and that was really busy as well. And so I got that one off the ground. And I think we've just always enjoyed the fruits of our labour of brand recognition and the reputation that we've got down in Brighton. So, both those shops have always been really, really busy. Yet when we opened up in Worthing, it was a whole different thing. Arrogantly, I definitely thought, we'll open up and it'll just be
same again. Yeah.
It'll be packed straight away. But no, we've had to work really, really hard.
Hmm.
In Brighton, I think it's such a busy place that that it's almost a bit like you build it and they'll come.
Yeah.
And you probably get that here in London as well. You're never going to fail. You've got to really be doing something bad to not succeed. Whereas in Worthing, we sort of found that the community is a little bit more discerning and a bit more loyal to the existing shops already. Sure. So we've had to work really, really hard. But that said, it's a fantastic shop.
Sometimes it always takes a bit longer, and it tastes a bit better when you've got to work a bit harder at it. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's consistency's the big thing for me. It's like sticking to the opening times, that you're there from night, that the shop is open from 9 till 6.
Yeah.
And just,
I think it's easy to get lost when it's quiet like that.
Absolutely.
You suddenly see from 3 till 6 there's not much going on. It's very eager to lock up at 4:30.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning of the end, really.
And also, I think it's how you deal with people, because at one point I was there on my own, for a long time at the beginning. And it's how you deal with people when you are fully booked and you're on your own and, you can't fit that person in. It's how you deal with them, as opposed to saying, sorry, mate, fully booked.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure barbershops up and down the country do. And we're just being a little bit more proactive, handing them a flyer that's got all the information on it, so they've got that reminder later on, And
now, is it pretty much all online booking, or do you end up with does the phone ring, or do people walk in, or is it?
I mean, the phone rings, it is amazing how people, they phone us up and say, oh, I can see that you've got a space at 2:30. Can you book me in, please? It's like, God's sake, But 9 times out of 10, a good bulk of our customers, they all just book online.
Yeah. So let's rewind a little bit, because obviously we seem to mention COVID and lockdown and we breeze past like that, like it was no big deal. but certainly as an owner, hey man, it kicked the shit out of me. I mean, it definitely had to show my resilience.
Yeah.
And it was a bitch. There's nothing else. Mm-hmm. I found it incredibly difficult. Yeah. You had your two, you had your staff.
Yeah.
As I did. How did you get on with that?
Do you know what? It's really weird. I think it's not until sort of halfway through last year that I actually realized how much it kicked my ass. I think I went into such an overdrive of worrying about how everybody else was. My daughter was born in the April of the first lockdown as well. Had moved into a house as well. So I had that, and I was just more worried about the staff and we came back, in what year was it?
21.
So we lost a few members of staff as well, because, through that time they decided they wanted to go off traveling and that sort of thing. And I think all I focused on was just staying open and surviving and keeping afloat. And I don't think I fully took it on board until late last year of just how much of an effect that did actually have on me. And I do remember at one point when the lockdown just kept getting pushed back and back and back. And after a while, I just thought, I've lost my purpose. Mm. You know, I need to be connected to people, and you know, like I thrive on the shop environment. That's what I'm good at, and that's where I belong. And I think, you know, it was a really unsettling time.
Mm. I mean, I think that was definitely the tough bit. I mean, I think it's interesting you're saying that it didn't really hit you. I felt it hit me in 23.
Yeah.
Without any doubt at all. Yeah. I think the kind of financials hit me in 23.
Yeah.
The emotional hit me in 23. Yeah. It was very weird. You almost had to let the bruises come out. And I was quite surprised when they did.
Yeah.
And I guess as an owner, well, how do you feel? But as an owner, you know, there's not necessarily someone who can put their arm around you and kind of wander you off and tell you, look, don't worry, it'll be all right. This is the way. You're kind of having to do it to yourself, and you're having to give yourself a bit of a talking to.
Yeah.
And then turn around and be positive to the to the team and keep them motivated.
Well, one of the key things that's really helped me over the last couple of years is I started to network a lot more. So getting a lot more involved at like Barber Connect, Salon International, you know, listening to podcasts. And actually, you know, speaking to other salon owners and barbershop owners and hearing their side of it, and, you know, listening to other people's experiences. And then you start to go, ah, it wasn't just me. Mm. But, you know, at the time, as a business owner, which I was still coming to terms with in itself, you know, was, and I think somebody mentioned it on one of your earlier podcasts of growing into the skin of becoming a business owner. Yeah. I can't remember who said it, but I really identified with that, because I've always sort of tried to be just like Alex, the barber who I love what I do and I enjoy what I do. And, you know, I love cutting hair and making people feel good. But, you know, it's only sort of since COVID that I thought, oh, actually, yeah, I do have a business and I can't be that guy anymore. I have to be a salon barbershop owner in order for the business to survive.
I think that's I think that's a big step, and it's a big leap when that dawns on you.
I think
we had our stores had been going well. I was quite happy, everything was groovy, and the shutdown did make you reevaluate. And I always like to think I'm quite open and honest. I try and stay open and honest, but I think in the aftermath of that, it's definitely my salvation from it has been to try and talk honestly with the team. And this, you know, this podcast has been a great help, because I'll wander into any random store I see. Apologies if I've been in, and apologies for if I will turn up. But it's surprising how many conversations I'll have, whether it's a barbershop owner or, you know, a barber who's just happened to be in there on his own that time and I've just wandered in.
Yeah.
That will open up and share and talk. And I think as a man, it's quite nice to have that. And our industry does seem, 100%. Our community seems to want to do that.
Yeah.
We're more and more and more supportive and open.
And since I've started to build my network of other people within the industry, and you start to run things by other people, you go, I'm not on my own, you know, and the problems that I'm going through aren't just my problems. You know, they're not isolated incidents. You know, this happens to everybody across the country. So I think, you know, there's definitely something there for, I think, you know, I'd love to like start up like a salon barbers, like a networking scheme or something where, you know, people can sort of share a bit of advice, and because there isn't stuff like that out there. And I think,
I think it's really valuable, you know, and I think, like I say, you know, chatting to different people, it's amazing how many, you know, when I started kind of randomly talking to everyone, I thought I'd end up with kind of, you know, a couple of hundred thousand different problems, but it always falls into the same kind of bag of half a dozen things. We all seem to struggle with a lot of the same stuff.
And I think the new challenge really, I think for businesses especially, is just the cost of everything now. And you know, I think that's the one thing that I've sort of had to really sort of double down on is just like looking at another one of my friends, Janine Hawkins Bush, who she owns some salons up in Alborough, and you know, she describes it as leaky buckets, you know, and you know, it's like looking at, you know, where you can save money, because everything's just going up and up and up.
Well, I think equally, I mean, we're saying that there's the, I don't know if you've come across the Salon Employers group, which is which is trying to kind of petition government, yeah. and you suddenly start reading how highly taxed the hair and barbershop industry is, because we're service led.
Yeah,
we get no reclaim on our VAT. Yeah. So most companies on the high street are paying with their reclaim about 9% VAT.
Yeah,
we're paying 17%.
Yeah,
because all of ours is staffing.
Yeah.
And the overhead is crippling. Mm. And I think that's the bit that we've suddenly got to kind of step up a little bit to look at our businesses.
Well, I think gone are the days where barbershops, like when I was, sort of kind of growing up within the industry, as it were, pretty much every barbershop was, sticking it in a shoebox and it was very much a sort of a closed off, sort of like cash led business. Mm. But, things just don't work that way anymore. And, and we do have to grow up, I think, as an industry.
And I think that's it. It is, suddenly you're looking at, what your prices are, looking at budgets, and getting brave. That's a really nice bit that I'm liking about our industry at the moment. I'm seeing us getting braver and braver with our pricing.
Yeah.
Because it has been, £7 haircut. Yeah, £7 and a £3 tip. And you kind of go, you can't make professional business out of a tenner. You can't cut someone's hair to a great quality in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think that confidence that we're starting to get to charge properly and to think about our businesses properly, hopefully means we'll survive, especially if we can get a little bit more support from the taxation.
Well, we've always been, I think, endemically, we've always been really frightened of putting our prices up massively. I mean, we started off, when I first opened the doors of Teddy Edwards, it was £9.50 a haircut, which is probably one of the reasons why we had these like enormous queues.
That's so, yeah.
But my point being is like now I'm charging £28, my guys have charged different prices. It's about inching it up. And I always remember when we first put it up from £9.50 to £12.50. And, there was only like a couple of people, but they'd moan saying, you're taking my tip away from you. Well, if you don't want to come, don't come. Mm. But what I've definitely noticed is that each time I put my prices up, I'm not putting them up because I'm being greedy. I'm putting them up because I need to survive.
Yeah.
I need to support my own family. But yet it's amazing how much support you do get from people. Mm. And, I've still got a few customers that tip me well over the odds because they think that I'm not charging enough.
Mm.
So,
no, I think that's it, and hopefully that will continue to grow. I mean, I think we were saying before we started that actually, we're both probably charging the most we've ever charged and taking the smallest profit we've ever had, because it is difficult. And I hope I think it's that balancing act between making sure the customer can afford it and giving value for money.
This is it, and you still want to create an experience because. I for one believe as well is that, and I genuinely love to give people that experience when they come in the shop, and I value how much people feel when they come into the shop, and more importantly when they leave, and obviously price, does play a big part in that. We're not the only ones that are skint at the moment. Everybody's up against it. So, there's that real fine line of us charging as much as we can to survive, but also still making it accessible for everybody to come in, because you don't want to alienate people. And, I think there's been plenty of barbershops, especially I know of a couple of places like down in Brighton that go for that real high-end bracket price. And they do struggle because they're almost like mimicking some of the high-end places in London, thinking that's what we can charge, but it doesn't quite work
I think with a lot of stores, you've got to look at who your audience is. And are there enough of them before you start? Yeah, I mean, interesting when you're saying about the experience. I mean, if we both go back 10, 11 years before we started, the thought of a barbershop experience for the customer was unthinkable, really. The experience was sit down, there's your haircut.
Yeah, the crappy radio on. There was like the newspaper would get dropped on the floor, God knows how many times, and that'd be it,
Whereas now, it's more than the experience. I mean, I said to you when you came in, I love that, you have Teddy Edwards IPA. I thought that was quite fun. And Yeah, but it's also more that I'm amazed by the amount of gents that really do want to have a good chat. We're starting to give more kind of the kind of mental health support, I guess, almost. You know, guys will sit and talk about, their jobs going to shit, or this is going wrong, or that's happening. And it's really interesting how that the barbershop experience is not just, your IPA with your name on it, or standing there in a white shirt with a dicky bow and an apron on. You know, it's become so much more as part of men's life, men's grooming.
Well, it was just before Christmas, in the build up to Christmas, one of my customers came in and I was like, "Are you all right, mate?" And he was like, "Al, can I swear?"
Yeah, yeah.
He went, "Al, I've really fucked up." And I was like, "What's happened?" And he told me just some really poor decisions that he made. And I'm not going to go name names or telling the story on a podcast, but my point being is that he was actually felt comfortable to open up. And I just said to him at the end of it, I was like, "Mate, you do know I'm here for you, don't you?" Like, and he was like, "Yeah, I do." And he said, "And that's why I came in." Mm. And, I gave him a good cut. You know, we had a great chat. You know, and he left feeling just that little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, and that's happened quite a lot.
I mean, I hate the phrase, but I do think it's quite wonderful that that we've now got our barbershops are now safe spaces.
Yeah,
I don't like that phrase, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's really lovely. I've had so many conversations.
But it sounds cliche, but it's true.
Yeah, no, it is. It's wonderful. You know, I'm not knocking it.
Yeah, but we've got a massive demographic of people that come to us because they feel safe in our shop. Mm. You know, so no matter what their background or what they identify as, it's, we have a really good reputation down in Brighton for people that can come in and just be themselves and not be judged.
Yeah.
And
that's all you want.
It's gold.
That's all you want. That's just such a beautiful kind of,
and I get a real
headline for you.
Yeah. And as we were sort of talking before this started was, I still have to every once in a while just stop for a couple of seconds and look around and go, shit, this is mine. Mm. This is what we've created. Yeah. And it's not just me, but all the people that work under the roof of Teddy's as well have led to that atmosphere being created. Yeah. So it's, it's great to see.
And that's the really lovely thing. The more people I've spoken to, I'm very proud of mine and everyone else is very proud of what they're up to because it is, it's not just kind of grown and changed. It's galloped into a completely different place and a space now, which is amazing. Well, mate, I think that's a good point to kind of finish there.
Yep.
We need another chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Noble Barber. If you liked it, please do like and subscribe. If you've got comments of what we should be doing in future, please give us your questions and we'll try and find an expert to talk to. Or if you're the expert and you want to come on here and help, stay in touch, we'll get you on. Come and join us on the sofa.